see if the system breaks down again or what we got going on here. I don't think it's the system. I think it's. I hope it's the cell phone. But okay.
Yeah. Well. So, yeah. My phone's been acting up a little bit. So.
So Cameron Worrell, take two with Cameron Worrell. That'll be the name of your show.
Right.
All right. So what I asked you before we had our technical glitch was, after last night's game with the Green Bay Packers surrendering a game they had no business surrendering, as a guy who played secondary in the NFL. How do you handle that moment when a game is taken from you? Is it even possible to walk off that field and say, we lost, and put it behind you? What do you do?
No, there's no way, because as a player on the Packers, you feel like you won that game, and you go to the video evidence, and it says you won the game. That was an interception. The game should have been over, not to mention the offensive pass interference that wasn't called that would have automatically ended the game. You feel like you got cheated out of a victory. And, you know, those things are, you know, it's a National Football League. It's not, I coach junior college football out in California, and sometimes the refs blow things and it might cost you a game, but this is the NFL. These guys are professionals, the greatest organization in the history of sports. And you would expect that, you know, at the end of a game, the most important play of the game, that they could get the call right and make the right decision. And to see something like that happen and to lose a victory against an NFC opponent on the road, a very tough place to play, and you go in there and get a victory and get it just ripped away from you like that, I would have been just extremely angry. I can't even imagine how they got 11 Packers back on the field for that extra point, because if it was up to me, I would have sat in the locker room and let them kick that extra point with nobody out there, just to show my disgust at the outcome of that game.
But, you know, and this is where the replacement refs, and I want to talk a little bit about them on the field as well, but this is where the players, I don't understand why the players are not more vocal. I mean, take the fines. Go out on the field and show solidarity with the fans. Now you're finally starting to hear it. Aaron Rodgers came out today and was loud about them. Why go out on the field and let these guys basically take your livelihood away? I mean, that game, if the Packers don't make the playoffs and they miss by a game, that changes careers. I mean, that call could change careers. It's crazy to allow these guys to do this. What am I missing here? It seems so crazy to me.
Well, I think it's such a tough position as a player, and just I'll use myself in as example. You know, I was a bottom of the roster type guy, a guy who had a role on special teams, a role as a backup and some sub packages. So I basically did what I was told to do, and if the coaches told me to go out and not pay attention to the officials and play the game just like it's a normal Sunday and we have to go and try to win this game regardless of who's officiating and what might happen, I mean, that's what I'm going to do. You know, I didn't have any type of power or sway with anybody in any organization I was with. I was just an employee, and I did my job to the best of my abilities. You know, now we see guys like Drew Brees, like Aaron Rodgers, guys that have a voice. When they say something, it means something to the media, to NFL fans, to their team, to other teams. You know, what they say has an effect throughout the league, and I think, you know, not just players now, but, you know, the Green Bay coaching staff, if they don't make the playoffs, you know, after last year losing in the their opening game in the playoffs, you know, now they don't make the playoffs this year. Now you're talking about a team that won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago out of the playoffs, and, you know, that's a hot seat for any NFL coach. You don't make the playoffs, you know, the seat starts
to warm
up a little
bit. I mean,
that's their livelihood you're talking about.
Yeah, it's crazy to allow your career to be in the hands of lingerie refs. I mean, it is about as I can't even talk about it because it makes so little sense. The one question I would have, maybe it's we're so cognizant now of the hits to the head, and we're so aware of it. Does it look like to you that this game is a little more violent this year because of these replacement refs, or are we just more aware?
I think we're just more aware, and I think guys have really tried to change the way that they play. Everybody is aware of the hits to the head, hits on defenseless receivers, helmet-to-helmet hits, targeting opponents in the helmet. Everybody's aware of that now, and people are really trying to take that out of their game, minus probably the Joe Mays hit on Schaub, which I can't even imagine how he even
just violent.
Do that.
I mean, that's
you know?
As violent
and
as
he, and he got suspended. And he got suspended for it, which I think he should have. But players are aware of it now, and, you know, nobody likes paying $50,000 for a hit, and guys are going to try to stop doing that. Now, sometimes things happen, and I think the Ryan Mundy hit on Darius Hayward Bay, I think those are things that are going to happen. But players are definitely more aware. What I see now is these hits happen so fast that these replacement officials really have no idea if the guy – if it was helmet-to-helmet contact, if a guy launched and targeted the head, if they see a hard hit and they think it might be something involved with the head or the helmet, they're going to throw a flag. If they can't really tell, they're not going to. Whereas the regular officials, I mean, they're pretty good at determining what a foul is in regards to a hit to the helmet or a helmet-to-helmet contact, because these are extremely difficult calls to make.
Well, this is what I've said about the replacement refs. It's not that they don't know what pass interference is. It's not that they don't know what illegal contact is. It's that the game is moving too fast for them, and they're not able to digest what Ed Hockley can digest in a short amount of time. Ed Hockley makes mistakes too, but the game doesn't move too fast for him, and clearly is moving too fast for these guys.
Yeah, and all the officials on the field, and you know, for instance, the Sidney Rice pass interference call last night, which was called defensive pass interference on Sam Shields and really should have been a no call at best, probably offensive pass interference on Sidney Rice. Those are things that these officials really have never been exposed to. The speed of these guys, the size, the hand fighting, you know, the little subtle things that offensive players and defensive players get away with, okay, now they consider that a flag because maybe by the letter of the law, it is a foul, but the regular officials understand how this game is played, how guys are covered, and what is allowed. And now you see kind of borderline calls being made all over the field as far as pass interference or illegal contact goes, where really, you know, I think it's unfair for these defensive guys who have been playing this way for their whole careers to have to try to adapt to these new officials who really have no idea what the call should be.
The Shields coverage was textbook. I mean, it was perfect.
He
played that ball as well as you can play corner. And I'm getting tired too. It's almost becoming like soccer flopping. I don't want to see receivers celebrating pass interference calls. And that's what's been happening this year. They are actually starting to understand. I think the receivers are understanding if they can play to the deficiency of the refs, they can sell the call now, which you never get away with the regular refs, and it's cheapening the game. It's infuriating.
Yeah, 100%. And listening to Steve Young and Trent Dilfer last night after the game, you know, everything that the NFL talks about, that Paul Tagliabue spoke about when I was in the league, and Roger Goodell spoke about when I was in the league, is protecting the integrity of the game, protecting the shield of the NFL, and that is their number one message. That's their the thing they consider most important, and by this standoff with the officials and whatever the reasoning behind it is, whether the officials are being greedy, you know, the NFL is a $10 billion plus business per year. You know, I think $12,000 more a game is not going to kill them. But whatever it is, it's cheapening the product on the field, and I think they have maybe lost, you know, the fact that, hey, the product on the field is why the NFL is so popular, because it's a pure game. It's played with the best players in the world, with the best officials in the world, and it's decided on the field. And when you start taking those things out of the game, now you're looking in a league that is not going to survive this if it goes on for much longer.
No, I think you said it right. Said it as well as you can say it there. This is a game. The NFL is a league where every single guy on that field should be the best at that position in the world. And there's no excuse any other. Should be the 32 best free safeties, should be the 32 best quarterbacks, should be the 32 best referees. And we don't have that now, and it has cheapened this game for a month. All right, let's go to the Bears, because I just get ticked off with the replacement refs. The Bears, I have said for years about the Bears, about the cover two shell, about that defense. You can run that defense well if you're getting a consistent pass rush from your front four. The Bears have never gotten that, I don't think, under Lovie. At least I've never seen it consistently. this front four, and there's really seven of them in rotation, maybe even eight. Is this the best pass rush you've seen from this team, certainly since your time there, but during the Lovey era?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, when we played great defense in 05 and 06, which is really, I think, the best years that Lovey has had in Chicago defensively, you know, the cover two system, and you said it, the cover two system, it simply does not work in the NFL without pressure from your front four. Because if you allow the quarterback to sit back in the pocket and allow his receivers to get into his routes and deepen their routes, you can beat the cover two. It's just, I mean, that's the quarterback has to get rid of the ball on time for the system to work. And when we were playing great defense, you know, Adewale Ogunleye and Tommy Harris and Tank Johnson and Alex Brown, we had guys that could get pressure with four guys, and that's why we were so good. That's why quarterbacks had to get rid of the ball. That's why we had so many turnovers, because they threw earlier than they wanted to. And now you see that this year, and I think it's even, you know, a better front four in regards to getting pressure on the quarterback with only four guys. And you'll start to see, you know, the turnovers. You'll start to see, like, Major Wright's interception. Quarterbacks have to throw the ball a little bit earlier than they want to, and the defense is already set up. As soon as the quarterback sets his feet, the underneath defenders set their feet and read the quarterback and make breaks on the ball. And when that ball comes out on time, there are a ton of plays to be made. And, you know, with the guys rushing the passer the way that they are right now, you know, if they continue to get this pressure, this system is – I'm not – you know, it's not – impossible to beat, but teams are going to have to work extremely hard to score touchdowns. You know, Lovey said it forever. You know, we don't care if offenses move the ball between the 20s. That's fine. When it gets time to get in the red zone, you're going to kick field goals. And that's what this system is based on. And with that front four and seven guys sitting in coverage reading the quarterback, it's extremely tough to score touchdowns against the defense when they're doing that.
When you get a great pass rush, too, I think it enables the Bears to cover up on defense their primary weakness. And I still see it. It feels like to me, and it hasn't really cost them yet. Gibson had a big drop. Luck missed a few guys week one. It still feels like to me that Chris Conte is a couple of steps slow on deep balls down the sideline. Are you seeing the same thing, or is that – See, you know, you can watch that all 22 tape. I don't know where the guys are supposed to be. So, I you know, it's hard to analyze. He looks a couple of steps slow, but I could be wrong. What have you seen?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's really – I don't think he's a couple of steps slow. I think sometimes he just gets a little bit out of position. And, you know, cover two as a safety, it's a tough coverage to play. You have a lot of ground to cover. You know, they're – basically asking you to cover from, you know, 3 yards from inside the top of the numbers to the sideline. And when you have guys that run 4-3 running down the sideline, it's a lot of ground to cover. I think what Chris Conte, when he gets in trouble sometimes, well, he doesn't stay square to the line of scrimmage and stay in his back pedal. He opens his hips if he sees the quarterback looking one way or the other. And when he has to come back in the opposite direction, that's when you see him, you know, just a few steps behind where he should be. So it's not necessarily – you know, where he might be too slow to play a position. I think he has the physical abilities to do it. It's just really refining his technique, and he's still a young guy. He's a second-year guy who, you know, it hasn't started even a full season's worth of games yet. So, you know, a guy that I think is going to develop into a very good cover two safety. He's physical. He can cover ground. He has pretty good ball skills. It's just refining his technique. And it's a tough technique to play, to stay square in your back pedal, to weave with the quarterback's eyes instead of opening and running to the quarterback's eyes. And then once you see the hand come off the ball to throw, now you can open up and go. And I think it's just going to be, you know, working in practice and refining that technique, and I think Chris Conte will be fine.
Interesting that it's technique and not ball instincts. That's something I wish I could impart on fans. You watched the All-22 tape. I would not have thought for a second that it was about his hip technique. I mean, that's great. Also, the other thing, though, Cam, you and I both know, 2 years at safety for the Bears these days is a long time. That's
oh yeah,
you know, he's a wily safety veteran now. I mean, where's Al Afalava when you want him? I mean, it's crazy that the rotating door.
And just to say, I you know, I'm glad that Lovey's made a decision to allow these guys to develop a little bit, because it's an extremely difficult system to play in physically, because your technique has to be so sound in the deep half field. And I played in the 3-4 in Miami where, you know, technique was kind of out the window. It was all about reading keys and breaking downhill on things. And in the cover 2 system, it's totally the opposite. You have to be super sound in your technique, see exactly what you're supposed to, and then make a break on the ball. So I'm glad that there's a couple of safeties that are allowed and given time to develop, because I think these guys can be pretty good cover 2 safeties.
The corner position, we've I think tend to undervalue it in the cover 2, because it's, you're usually soft off the receivers. It's more, I've always felt it's more about tackling than it is about ball hawking. What's gotten it? What, this Tim Jennings transformation is insane. I can't remember a defensive player who looked average 1 year and sensational the next year the way he does. He's playing corner as well as anybody in the league right now. What are you seeing from him that's different than a year ago?
I think with Tim Jennings, you know, you have a veteran guy who's played in this system for a while. What I think is happening is he is an instinctual corner, and you don't really have the opportunity a lot in Lovey's system to play your instincts. But I think he's gotten away with it a little bit this year and, you know, studying the game tape and recognizing what receivers are doing to him throughout the game, and he's putting himself in great position to make plays. With that, you know, that front four is getting pressure and allowing these guys to play a little bit more aggressive than we're used to seeing them. Like you said, we're used to seeing corners off at 8 yards and getting in their back pedal and playing a little bit soft on the outside. Well, once, you know, and I think Chicago is one of the best defenses when they have a lead. I think they're just ferocious when they have a lead and they can pin their ears back, the front four, and get after the quarterback. And the guys in the back end know this team has to throw the ball to get down the field and try to score touchdowns. And what you're seeing in Tim Jennings is a guy who is extremely well prepared on Sundays for how the offense is going to attack him. And when he has the opportunity to make a play, he's going to try and make a play, and he has been doing that this year. I think that's kind of the difference between, you know, Peanut is a sound system guy, and he does things that nobody can do. He's extremely physical. He's tall and long. He can run. He can cover. He's probably the greatest player I've ever seen at forcing fumbles by punching the ball out or stripping the ball out. You know,
it's
I mean,
the signature move
uncanny.
Of Tillman. I mean, the ball punch is just amazing.
It's uncanny how he can do that, and I've seen him do that forever. But, you know, Tim Jennings is a guy who can run, is extremely quick out of his breaks, and if he sees something develop, he has the confidence to go and make a play. And sometimes, you know, you see a guy like Asante Samuels who makes a ton of plays but also gives up a ton of plays because he plays outside the system sometimes. Whereas Tim Jennings, what's really impressive about it is he's making plays within probably the system, the defensive system, with the least amount of wiggle room to play outside of the system and make plays. And that's what is very impressive, because he's playing technique, he's playing exactly what his responsibility is, and he's still finding the ability to make plays on the outside. You know, it's a little bit Nathan Vasher 2005-ish in regards to
I was just going to make
the ball,
comparison. I just hope that 2006
and
is better.
Yeah, and making plays on the ball. It's really impressive to see. And, you know, you're going to start seeing teams when they get down, when that front four is getting after them, try to find other places to beat the covers than to attack Tim Jennings, even though he's, you know, all of maybe 5'8" and a half.
Well, I mean, that you just perfectly segued into my next question, which is you stood behind him, behind Brian Urlacher, when I think he was the best defensive player in the sport, 05-06.
Yeah.
What would worry me as they get ready to start playing the better tight ends in the league, he does not look like to me a guy who can cover certainly the space he covered 5 years ago. Where do you think he is at right now? Give us that percentage. Is he at 60%? Is he at 50%? Where does he look like to you as compared to his heyday?
Well, I think right now at the beginning of the season, you know, not having a preseason, not really playing much football before week one, you know, I think compared to the 05-06 Brian Urlacher, you're looking at about 60%, you know, of what he was. But I think as the season progresses, as he gets in better shape, as he gets a better feel for the game, you know, as he gets the speed down a little bit better, I think you're going to see a guy that's playing at 75 to 80% of what he was in his prime. He's not in his prime anymore. You know, there's nobody that will sit here and argue that he is. But he is still one of the best middle linebackers to play in a cover two system because he can still run for a middle linebacker. He's 6'4". He knows how teams are going to attack this defense. And I think once he just gets a little more comfortable, it's funny talking about being comfortable for a guy who's been playing football for as long as he has and played in the system for as long as he has, but nothing can replace regular season NFL football. You know, you can be in as great a shape as you want. You can study film as much as you want, but until you're out there and you play game after game, you start to get a feel for what's happening. You know, now you'll start to see kind of the Brian Urlacher that we're used to seeing. He's not going to be a guy who's going to have 18 tackles a game. He's not going to be a guy who makes a tremendous impact on the game every week, but he's still one of the best guys that you can put in this system because he is big. He can still get down the middle of the field and help cover in that Tampa 2 system. You know, where I kind of see him, you know, struggling compared to when I was there playing with him is he really struggles getting off blocks now. And it really wasn't an issue because he was so quick. You know, he would really deliver the blow as opposed to an offensive lineman getting the proper angle and attaching themselves to him. And, you know, like I said, you know, give him a few more weeks, you know, middle of the season, I think he'll be getting off those blocks. He'll be making tackles. You know, how he was last year, I thought he played good football last year. You know, we're never going to see the Brian Urlacher that we saw, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But I think he's still a guy that can be, you know, there's no better options out there right now than Brian Urlacher to play in this system this year. You know, moving forward, obviously a tough decision what Chicago is going to do for the future. I'm sure they're going to draft a guy eventually to take over that spot. But, you know, definitely a guy who will play better football than we've seen these first couple weeks.
Dallas Cowboys Monday night. I think the Bears pass rush should have a good game. The Cowboys can't block anybody either. The question I would have is, you know, have we seen – I'm not sure that these corners this year – I know they haven't. They haven't had to line up with the size and the speed the Cowboys present at wide receiver. To me, this smells like a bad matchup for the Bears' defense. They get pressure. I think they could probably cover for it. Do you see this, corners on receivers? Is this a bad matchup for the Bears?
I mean, the Cowboys are a tough matchup for any secondary, really, because, you know, not only do you have Dez Bryant and Miles Austin, two of the better guys in the league, but now Kevin Ogletree has really stepped up and become a weapon for them to use, and you always have Jason Witten inside who, you know, consistently catches 80, 90, 100 balls, especially from Tony Romo. But the great thing about the way the Bears are rushing the passer right now is, one, it allows them to play more cover two and get the ball out on time and not give up plays down the field. Two, the Cowboys can't block anybody, so I definitely expect them to pressure Romo the entire time. And three, Tony Romo does not do well when he's pressured and has to get the ball off. When Tony Romo is really, really effective, it's when he can sit back in the pocket, sometimes get outside of the pocket and make plays down the field. That's when you really see Tony Romo hurt teams, when he has the ability to do that and get the ball down the field to his receivers. I think Chicago is going to say, hey, you want to try to run the ball on us? Go ahead. We're going to bring front four pressure. We're going to sit back in cover two, and we're going to make Tony Romo be efficient and move the ball down the field and try to get into the end zone. You know, exactly the same game plan, you know, we used when we faced Peyton Manning. You know, if you want to try to run the ball, go ahead, but we're not going to let you beat us down the field. And I think that's the mindset they're going to go into this game with, is Dez Bryant's not going to have a big play, Miles Dawson's not going to have a big play. They were going to force you, Tony Romo, to be efficient, to not turn the ball over, which he's done so far early this season, and have them try to beat the Bears that way. And I really don't think that the Cowboys have the patience, have the ability to block up front to give Tony Romo the time to make plays down the field. And you know, it's a physical mismatch with the receivers Dallas has compared to the cornerbacks that Chicago has. But I think it's definitely a schematic mismatch, so to speak, with the way Chicago is playing right now with getting pressure with four guys and sitting seven in coverage. I don't think Tony Romo can beat this team if they get pressure, which I think they will.
He is America's greatest junior college football coach. He is our friend Cam Worrell. Thank you, Cam, and let's do it again next week. Let's make it a regular spot.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thanks, bud.
Yeah, no problem.